Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality this evening, of course. And if you would like to participate in tonight's show, we're going to be talking about issues with marriage. And there's going to be a lot of interesting talk. Some of this is going to be maybe controversial. I'm going to be certainly expressing some opinions, some things that are my understandings about metaphysics and sexuality, because I think that sexuality is a critical element whenever we're dealing with marriage, and other issues. Actually, sexuality makes a relationship, in my mind, an intimate one. And it changes the relationship to the feasibility of being a marriage. Now, some people have marriages and they may not exercise sexuality. To me, that's more like a friendship, you know, kind of thing. But that's one of those things that you may have a difference of opinion. And you can call in if you do. If you're in the U.S., try 877-876-5227. Those of you in Canada, 888-815-9756. And that's while we're here on the air. Okay, so let me start off by first, I sort of like the disclaimer. I'm gonna add my own disclaimer tonight. And, I know that one of the areas that we will be talking about and covering is this question of people who are practicing homosexuality and seek to have it recognized in a relationship form as a legal marriage. I want to talk about some of my thoughts about that. And in so doing, I may create, among a number of listeners, both those who may have gay rights as an issue with them and those who may feel that gay people shouldn't have all the same kinds of rights that people that aren't gay have or whatever, there may be a number of people who think that what I'm saying is not going to be in accord with their political beliefs or their philosophies. That's okay. And if you want to call and disagree with me or give another opinion, that's all right too. Let me start off by first expressing this thought. It's about sexuality before we get into the question of marriage and things about God and things about how this all fits into society and children. And how do you maintain a relationship with somebody for a very long time? And does it go over to the other, into the next life? And I'm talking about the astral life and the monastic life. And do people ever come back? And so, I mean, there's so many issues about this subject that I just want to give you an idea of where we're headed into, because it's a big issue, isn't it? Okay. So, to begin with, sexuality. Let's start with that. That's a subject I like to talk about. It gets people usually interested in what we're talking. See, sexuality is really, and I don't want to make this sound too scientific, but it's really very much an energy thing. And most people don't know that. Most people think it's, you know, like, oh, well, yeah, kind of like it's how you feel, and if you don't feel this or you feel that, that's cool. And it's more about, in many people's minds, a kind of feeling thing, then they think of it as an energy thing. But I'm going to suggest that in metaphysical terms now, sexuality is really about the exchange between two people of a certain type of energy. Some people call this seventh type or seventh ray or seventh chakra. I mean, there's a lot of different names for it. And the seventh chakra is actually the sexual chakra. But it's energy that is associated and created within a part of us that we call the sexual center. It's where, in organ sense, and of getting away from the etheric part of our bodies, which is where the chakras are, but the organs that are affected by it are the sexual glands and the sexual organs. So ultimately, when we are discussing sexuality, there is an energy that is designed and specifically engineered for the operation of us as sexual beings. Okay, does that make sense? I mean, even if you didn't know it before, it doesn't sound totally outrageous to believe that, right? I hope it doesn't. But, okay, so what does that mean then when you decide, when we decide, when one of us, more than one of us decides, to have a sexual relationship of some sort, and leaving, I'm not going to get yet into marriage, but just starting off with this concept, with another person. What is going on? Well, this is the interesting thing, and I'm going to try to describe this as in as simple a way as possible. For those of you who want to know the real in-depth stuff, I wrote a book called Life's Hidden Meaning, and if you go to Chapter 7 in that book, you can read in part of that section, that chapter. It's a big chapter. It's like 75 pages, and it's a big, each page is huge. So there's a lot of information in that chapter, but some of it is about sexual energy, and it goes into detail as pictures, not pictures of people having sex, of course, but pictures of how the energy moves from one person to another. Now, let me try to describe this to you. The concept here, and it's fascinating. I really love this concept because it really exposes the element of spirituality and sexuality. That's what I like about it, and I hope this will do it for you as well as I explain it. One person gives to the other person the sexual energy in their body, but before they give the energy to the other person, they have to reverse the spin of the energy so that it matches the sex of the other person. Now, this is going to fit into issues with homosexuality, so we have to. This is important to understand this, too. So you have to reverse the spin of the energy to the other person and somewhat the direction that the energy kind of moves as it goes through time and space. We'll call it phase. That's what it's called, phase. So you're matching like the frequency and the phase and even the power or amplitude of the other person or attempting to, with the energy that you have in your own body. You're converting it into something they can find beneficial, and you're helping them to experience more, not necessarily of you, which is a very odd thing, but more of improving and helping to develop themselves. This is the strangest part of sexuality. Sexuality is really about giving to another person, not who you are, but giving to them a greater sense of who they are. They're discovering themselves in the process, and vice versa. So this is the most amazing thing. In metaphysical and spiritual terms, sexuality is helping the other person become greater of who they are, and for them to do the same in reverse to you, it's the experience of being the other person. Because what you sense as you give this energy, I'm getting excited about it, I know, but I love this, I love it. As what you experience as you're giving this energy to the other person is they are experiencing more of who they are, and you, we, us, are experiencing more of what they are in ourselves. It's like turning yourself inside out and becoming the other person, and vice versa, but they are helping you, in equal terms, to experience more of yourself from what they are doing. It's a very, I know this is, you know, you got to kind of almost wrap your head around this because it's like everything is turned inside out. But it's so beautiful because of what it really means. It means that you're literally becoming a part of the other person. If you are doing the sexuality in a way that I call making love, the love part is that in order to do this properly, you have to reverse the spin and direction of the energy that you have within yourself, and that takes quite a bit of focusing onto the other person to get it right, or it won't work. And your focus has to be on the other person rather than yourself. Now, you might say, well, hey, I don't have sex that way. You know, I just, I just have sex and it feels good and I like it, and sometimes that doesn't even involve another person. So what about all that? Well, in those cases, you're not doing what I'm saying, and you're not making love. And you can have sex without doing anything of what I'm talking about, but then the results are that you're only stimulating your own senses, only feeling your own feelings and not the other person. As a matter of fact, the other person, for all intents and purposes, is kind of irrelevant, and they could be anybody or nobody, because what you're experiencing is just your own feelings and your own creations. The negative part of that is you don't become intimate, you don't get closer, you don't experience love, and at the end of the experience is a sense of loss. You might feel good during the time you're doing it. I'm not going to deny that whatsoever. It might be arousing and stimulating and whatever you want to call it, fun. But the net result at the end of the experience afterwards is a sense of loss. And the loss is that rather than getting closer and becoming more conscious and becoming more expansive by becoming part of another person, you've become less. You've shrunk all those things. Consciousness drops to some small level, but a small amount at a time. And senses become lessened, so there's an awareness reduction. You become kind of numbed in some ways. There's a small amount. We're not talking about a huge amount per time. It's just a cumulative. And the overall sense of long-term pleasure, long-term joy from the experience is missing. On the opposite side, if you do what I first suggested in changing the energy, the results are profoundly different. They improve your senses, improves your consciousness, increases your intimacy with the other person, produces a sense of oneness together, expands consciousness significantly for both people simultaneously, and leads to even greater potential things if it's done consistently and at greater and greater levels of ability between the two people. Now, that's a science. Okay. Now, maybe you don't agree with me. That's okay. I don't mind if people don't agree with me. You know that. But I just thought it would be good to explain that because I think it's so interesting that that's how it works. Now, the fun part about it for me is that what you're really doing is you're experiencing some part of God by experiencing another person from the inside out, while you still exist as a person yourself. Because you're expanding your reality to the reality of others, in this case, another person. And it gives you a different reality about the Creator. It exposes more of the heart and crown chakra's sense during acts of lovemaking, in which not only is the other person experienced, but simultaneously so is our Creator, God. Because we realize the other person as a soul as much as a person, and therefore we realize God through that experience. It's a tremendously improving kind of thing. So it really gets into some far-out stuff. And this is what I recommend for all of you who are listening, as a potential goal. Now, there are some caveats. Let me get into those. I got to watch my time here. Yeah, I'm doing great on time. It's fantastic. And those caveats are the following. And I want you to think about this. The act of making love conditions us and teaches us how to become close in a very difficult way. It's not easy to do this thing that we're talking about. It takes time, it takes patience, it takes a lot of love. It is extremely difficult to do, but once it is done, it is amazing. And we can all appreciate its benefits. However, because you are directing it to a very specific individual, if you were to start having this, or try to have this sexual experience with, say, three people at the same, or near the same time, the results are diminishing because each person is going to have a different phase, frequency, the whole thing, and you're going to be moving your focus from one kind of person to another kind of person in terms of energy signatures. Even if they're very similar to each other, we're all so unique that you won't get it right, and the results are a diminishing return. So polygamy or frequent different partnered relationships diminish the capability of making love and may prevent it completely, really, for most people. And so the goal of having a truly loving relationship in which sexuality is involved is that that sexuality be done with one other person and not a whole slew of other people. And some of you are probably scratching your head and you say, yeah, but that's great. Don't you have to find the person you want to be with and what about, you know? Well, listen, it isn't a perfect world. I'm not trying to tell people that, you know, you got to immediately go out and find the one and only right now because you got to have the right kind of making love sex. No, humans are adaptable. We do the best we can with what we've got. And so for some people, they haven't found the right person. That doesn't mean they should be necessarily celibate. It just means that they, if they're aware of what I'm suggesting, they should be, like, looking for someone to be monogamous and maybe over time totally committed to. That would be a great thing if you can achieve it, because then this whole system works a lot better for you. You see, I'm not saying it because there's some kind of, you know, hey, we got to do this because we got to do this thing, or because the Bible told me so. I'm just suggesting strictly as a matter of physics, or metaphysics at least, that this is how, if this is how it works, why not go about it in a way that's going to benefit you and others the best way possible? That's all I'm trying to say. So don't think I'm sitting here trying to be the moral expert in telling people what to do. I'm not. I'm just trying to describe it as best as I can, as best as I understand it. And also, of course, I've done some personal experimentation with this. I've talked to many, many other people who, after they have tested these theories, especially if they've read it in one of the books I've wrote or articles or a lecture or whatever, they come back and they say, you know, I didn't believe it at first, but I really tested the things you said, and it turned out to be right. Like, you know, they didn't expect that, but that's what it turned out to be. That's fine. And there's other people, really, someone will come back and say, well, I just didn't discover that for myself. I said, fine, that's all right. You know, I mean, you know, individual experiences do not have to follow everything I say, obviously. And there could be quite good reasons for that, by the way. Not because I'm necessarily wrong or right, but because there's a lot more to it than my simple explanations can cover in the period of time that we have. But nonetheless, that's interesting to me that I get that feedback. So I think that there's accuracy to the things I'm saying. Because of that, the feedback is helpful. If you have things to say about it, email me, let me know about it, or call me or whatever. I'd love to hear about your own experiences. Okay, so let's move on to some of the issues. Now, this is an issue, obviously. Sexuality is a big issue. If we assume that marriage means that people are, by nature, by the definition, is going to involve intimacy in a sexual sense in nearly all cases, but not necessarily all, between two people, what happens then, and I'm now going to get into that really political thing, what happens if two people are the same sex? Because we have an issue right away by the definition that I gave about sexuality and intimacy and love. What happens if you're not reversing the spin to begin with? That's a big deal because the spin determines the sex. And in each of the bodies, it's too complicated to get into right now, but just think of it just as a simple idea that there's a part to the energy that we call spin, and that spin is reversed when you give it to another person. You're learning how the person of the opposite sex feels. But what happens when it's someone of the same sex? Well, that's where we get into the quagmire. That's where the problem starts becoming a problem. Because that element of lovemaking is missing for two people of the same sex. So what happens then? Well, the level of intimacy is not as strong. The feeling of commitment will not be as developed during sexual lovemaking. And in reality, by definition, it'd be hard to describe it as lovemaking. They're definitely being sexual, but it's hard to describe it as lovemaking because there is not the thing, the one of the critical elements of lovemaking, of being the other person, cannot be as readily sensed or experienced through homosexual acts. That's a problem. For people who are homosexual, especially if they're listening right now to my voice, you probably can identify some of the things I'm going to suggest, even if you disagree with me, that's okay. That if you were ever homosexual, and maybe you weren't, but if you've talked to some of the people who are, or if you know of some people who are that have described their experiences, you may identify the fact, you may, or maybe you'll disagree with me, that after sexuality, even though you're with someone that you truly know in every other way you love, the sexuality does not seem to bring you closer to that person in many ways. Maybe there's some ways it does, such as not being sexual, but holding each other, caring, caressing, but not in a purely sexual fashion. And this is a detriment to people who are homosexual because they can't experience this. The strength and longevity of the relationships may be somewhat tenuous. Not to say they can't have them. I'm just saying it's more difficult. You've got to really work at it more. If by the nature of the sexuality you're not gaining the benefits that heterosexual people are. So this is a metaphysical quagmire. It's a problem. I have talked to people who are homosexual and guided them, if you want to call it that, of ways, and I'm not going to go into the details of this on the air anyway, of ways to try to countermeasure this and to still improve their relationships. And there are things I can talk about. I prefer not to do it on the air, but there are things that can be done to make it better. But you can't change the nature of the energy itself. And for those of you who have, you know, the stronger religious views that say that this, there it goes, that's proof. Well, it may be proof that God did not originally intend for people as a natural state of sexuality and intimacy as it leads into marriage, for people to be homosexual because it doesn't work very well for those people. Just the sexual act itself doesn't work as well for them to develop the intimacy and love that they may have in many other parts of the relationship in comparison to a homosexual. So if you want to believe there's a creator, and I do, and there's a perfectly sensible and understandable, consciously we can understand what that creator's intention is, then it appears, yes, I'll agree, God chose that we, on a long-term basis, in a committed relationship, be heterosexual because sex improves heterosexual relationships. And it doesn't necessarily do that to homosexual relationships. And so that, to me, is an indicator. I've written this. I've said it. And people hate me for it, I guess. Some do. Because they said, well, how could you say that? You know, that's very bigoted against homosexual people. But you know what? I don't consider it bigoted. I consider it truthful based upon knowledge. Not, you know, I'm not trying to put homosexual people down. I'm just trying to say it the way it is. If you don't like it, well, you know, maybe you should take it up with God, because, or take it up with whoever can change the system. I don't know. Seems like the system is pretty much set based upon how we function, but maybe there's some alternatives. And I have come up with some things to kind of circumvent it a little bit. But generally speaking, this is the way we are made. We are made this way. Okay. So, what then does this mean in terms of marriage in general? Should we say that marriage is only meant for men and women, and not for men and men, and not for women and women? Well, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. Here's my answer to this. If we're going to use marriage as the only word to describe what is supposed to be the way that you can best achieve intimacy in a relationship, then unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon your political position, it seems as though marriage should be defined as a relationship between a man and a woman, because we don't have the alternative to describe those that suffer some penalty or consequence for it not being that way. So that's a concern. Now, this is tonight's show, again, it's issues with marriage. It's not about just marriage in general. It's the issues that sometimes come up as a point. What I suggest, and this is going to sound strange, is that we have a marriage with easier intimacy and marriage with difficult intimacy. And maybe just define those two things, and maybe you know spell one with an extra consonant or something thrown in. I don't know. But what I'm saying is that, you know, it's so ridiculous, because we're talking about a name instead of understanding the concepts behind it. And this is where I think that our problems are in our society right now, is we don't really understand the things that we're trying to make laws about, the things that we're trying to make decisions and medical concerns about, and even life concerns in general. If you don't understand what it is you're talking about, making laws about that stuff is pretty crazy business. So my suggestion is that we not legislate things that deals with issues we don't understand until there's a consensus that we really understand what the heck we're talking about. But that's just me. And, of course, I can certainly be wrong about that. So, at any rate, I do think it's something to think about. We're coming up to this in the middle of our program here, our hour. So I would like you to think about that. If you like, certainly call in and we can talk about it. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a lot of other things. Children, how they fit in. We'll talk about how do you stay together, how do you not stay together. What are the problems that people are presently confused about and that they're trying to deal with? And many, many other issues. Hopefully this first part has been interesting enough so that you'll stick around. I want you to stick around, because there's a lot more that I want to cover. And again, this show is supposed to be thought-producing and thought-provoking, so we're trying to manage to do that. We will be back in about 2.5 minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about issues with marriage. I hope I didn't scare anybody away in that first section. If you have any thoughts or comments, you can call at 877-876-5227 in the U.S., 888-815-9756 in Canada. And let me continue on now with some of my thoughts about some other areas dealing with marriage. First of all, there is, among a number of people, a concern that the nuclear family is in trouble, and families are not very functional. Children are becoming couch potatoes with little devices connected to their heads, and they're playing these video games or whatever. And there isn't much interaction, and that's a issue. Now the question is that issue really happening, or is that something that happens with every generation and we just think it's happening, you know, the newfangled devices and children not listening and doing that sort of stuff? This is my suggestion, that the relationship that exists between the parents is the primary, we'll call it, foundation of how the family will develop. Children are really a kind of product of the two parents' interactions and relationship. If that relationship is intimate, strong, virtuous, consciousness-raising, and unselfish, focused out, in other words, the children that come from that relationship, in almost every case, will have similar qualities and develop great character qualities, besides the ones that you might have thought I just said, but character qualities that are more things that are oftentimes judged by other people. And the children will have the greatest level of success at functioning more as a soul, as well as a person, in their future life. the relationship of the children to each other and to the parents, or anybody else around, grandparents, other relatives, will dramatically be better if the relationship between the parents are exemplary to and showing the love that is happening between them, including sexual intimacy. Now, this is where, again, we get into a controversial area, because if sexual intimacy is reduced or not as strong, possibly because of homosexuality, but possibly because of infidelity, because people are not willing to put out the energy to be close in that way with their partner, this weakens the relationship between the parents, and it produces a relatively negative environment for the children. And that's a danger. That's a problem. And so the ultimate goal is to have this relationship there. Now, let's talk about single parents. There you have a real detrimental circumstance, because the foundation of the family strength does not come from a single parent, but it comes from two parents, and preferably of the opposite sex. But I said preferably, I didn't say absolutely, it has to be, but preferably, where there is intimacy and love and all the other combination of issues, including the development of a virtuous focus in life, so that the children have a model that is both subconscious and conscious that they experience every day. And this leads them to seeing themselves as an extension of how their parents exhibit and function in loving ways. It is critical, in my mind, therefore, that people consider a long-term objective in having children to be part and parcel as having an intimate relationship with another person. And the idea of having children without that, I think, is selfish and destructive. Now, what happens when two people don't get along? You know, they had children, they don't, and all this stuff. And well, it's more negative for two people to have the antithesis of what I said, and to be having a fighting, arguing, destructive, totally non-intimate, polygamous, you name it, relationship, or just non-sexual and permissive relationship with other people. Those kinds of things are worse than being a single parent by any stretch. So it isn't better to maintain a relationship and household between two people who are constantly at battle with each other or having other contentious issues, because that does more harm to the children than does the individual or single parent might, where one visits or the children visit one or then the other or whatever, however you want to describe it, or just have a single parent and the other parent is not even around. Either way is better than to have contentiousness and hostility in the parents. That will produce the most unstable situation, the most unsatisfactory of results. So that may not surprise a lot of you. I think a lot of people may have discovered that on their own by now. But this is in metaphysical terms. You might say, okay, where's the physics of it about this now that you're saying? Well, this has to do with how children are able to grow in consciousness through their emulation and their discovery of themselves through their parents' own interactions with them and eyes. There's so much that happens literally daily in that arena that it is far more than any child learns in going to quote-unquote school. Schools cannot replace this at all. They are incapable of doing that because the school is a different setting completely than the family setting. And unless the school happens to have two teachers who might be functioning in an intimate way, and, you know, they kind of take on the classes, their family or something. I mean, that would be a little bit bizarre, wouldn't it? But I'm just saying that, you know, under normal circumstances, schools are not a substitute for, or even close to being, like, an acceptable way of substituting for the family. And what about others besides the two parents? What about the people outside of the tightest nuclear elements, like friends of the family, relatives that are close, like uncles and aunts, and what about neighbors? And there's a whole slew of people that can enter into this equation. Yes, if you live in a community, now this is different than just having relatives or having a neighbor, that functions in a similar way. That is an extremely helpful model that will improve upon the conditions that I'm describing for rearing children. These are kind of rare these days, though. You know, I mean, I think they were more prevalent in times past than they are available for most people today. And that's where we may have some weakness. Going beyond the nuclear family, I think we are weaker in terms of building the correct or the best social systems for our children. And televisions do not replace this need by any stretch of the imagination. So because it's interactive. Now, maybe, I guess, when we have fully interactive televisions, and that I keep talking about that happening, that might have something. I mean, where you make friends that are maybe thousands of miles away, but you meet them every day for an hour while you're talking to them over your computer or TV, or however you want to describe it. And it's truly interactive. There's a bunch of people, and they can all come and go. And yeah, I mean, that would really be helpful. I don't know that it's being developed or being sold or being, you know, that is not part of presently what children usually do with these things. They usually use them too much alone. Now, they may have emails. They might even have face-to-face encounters with one person sometimes. But I'm talking about a more mutual group kind of experience, as might happen in a family situation. And that's a little different. Also, it's difficult to carry out actions, and part of our Creator's desire in this universe is that there be activity or interaction between life. Well, interaction does not mean just verbal. So you're missing some of the interactions, be it taking out the garbage or washing the dishes. Those are kind of more, I guess, laborious ones. Or possibly creating something together on the kitchen table or whatever. Maybe dyeing Easter eggs or making the Christmas tree. But those kinds of things are very critical, and they cannot be substituted for with just a television screen or a computer. So we have to think about the models that we're presently using and see if we can expand them into a fuller experience as our universe is actually functioning, because otherwise we stilt the values and change the experience of our children as they grow up, and the results can be quite negative. A child that learns most of what that child experiences through a computer is not going to be a child that is very well-rounded, that can interact with other people away from the computer, and that can do so in ways that are virtuous. So this is a problem that we have to be concerned about. And I hope all of us can find answers for that, maybe by limiting the amount of time that is spent in those isolating issues, even if there's email. Email is not a solution. Even if there's talking, which some people are doing, of course, with a camera and et cetera, that's not as valuable as true interaction where you share physical movements together in some fashion. Okay? So think about that, and let me go on to another issue with marriage, and that is, what about people staying together for long periods, if not for life of time, in which they do rear children or choose not to, and in which they are maintaining an intimate relationship, but they have problems in adjusting to each other's changes as well as adjusting to the pressures of living in such a difficult world as the physical world here is on Earth. And here are the answers. The first is that the intrinsic nature of intimacy in a marriage is such that the problems need to be shared on an equal level between the people. This is where sexuality really improves the situation, especially if you're heterosexual, because you have to take on the problems of the other person, the difficulties of the other person, as well as your own, in order to feel what the other person is really experiencing, and for there to be a sense of support between yourself and the other person during difficult times. Most people have disagreements or arguments between themselves when they lack a sense of support from their mate, when they feel that they are experiencing in isolation some negative elements of their existence or life that their intimate, supposedly intimate mate is not readily willing to experience or to try to delve into and to be an interactive party to. This is very important. Again, I get into this action issue, that if you're not willing to interactively become involved in the difficulties of another person, you are refusing to truly share consciousness, to expand your consciousness, to become part of theirs, and to truly involve and become part of your life with their own life. And that will disrupt and eventually destroy a marriage. And I think, this is my opinion based upon, well, years ago, I, of course, saw many people in therapy, and some of them were couples counseling, so I know this to be from that experience, but also in more recent times in a metaphysical and spiritual sense. I think that this is the dominant or predominant issue that causes people to fail after they've stayed together for more than a few years. In other words, at the beginning of relationships, it's something other than just this. It's really getting to know a person and maybe having illusions about them and yourself, and those illusions cause so much misunderstanding that you may be with the wrong person, or they may be with the wrong person as far as you're concerned, so as far as they're concerned. So you have a true mismatch. But let's say you've gotten past that stage. If you've gotten past that stage, the thing that really causes relationships to crumble is this other thing of not being willing to become an interactive member or part of the other's experiences, which are more negative, which have more difficulty. Be willing to take on those difficulties with creative fervor and with understanding to be supportive. That's a big part of why marriages fail. Now, what's the other part that I suggest that really is another part, a piece of the puzzle? And that is getting away from the negative side. Some people fail to do the opposite. During periods of creative expression and development and design, instead of sharing those periods, one goes off and sews clothes and the other one is in the garage banging away trying to make something or whatever. And the results are, I'm making it simple and rather stereotypical, that the creative element of interaction is missing in a positive sense. the more of that that takes place, the more the people are, again, separate. And even in their lovemaking and in intimacy, they will not feel as close to each other. And so they may not be as attracted to each other either. The attraction principle comes from creation. If you don't have creation in common between yourself and your mate, the results are going to be a decrease in attraction, an increase in contentious issues, or sometimes just complacency and not even being, you know, interested in almost anything the other person is doing. And so you've got to have both of these sides working, and they have to work on a regular basis. It can't be, well, once a month we go do, or once a week we even. No, this needs to be all the time. I don't want you to think I'm talking about some kind of special occasion where some kind of creative activity is shared in a positive sense, or some type of negative problem is you come in once in a while and pat the other person on the head and say, oh, you poor dear. That isn't going to work, because this is something that is a moment-to-moment issue. We live in a world in which interaction is continuous. It's not like, oh, I'll turn it on and off when I feel like it. No, it's about a consistency, and especially in a long-term relationship, a lifelong-term relationship, it has to be consistent for a very long time for it to be truly satisfying and work. Now, I'm virtually out of time here, so let me just tell you very quickly that these things that I'm describing become even more important when we leave the physical world because of longer periods that people live, especially in the astral world, and they really have to be sought and maintained together, or relationships will crumble. We think, oh, gee, in a more spiritual world like the astral life, the afterlife, people will be more spiritual and they'll stay together forever, and that's really not the case. They will get bored with each other. They become actually, to their detriment, feeling as though they're being pushed together for too much in a world in which time seems to go on forever. That's the kind of problems that people face. Well, you know what? I would love to talk more about this, and I think for another time I might do that. Maybe even next week I'll continue. I don't know, but we'll see. At any rate, I want to mention, if you have time this Sunday, December 7th, I'd like you to tune in to 1170 a.m. if you're in the Boston or Providence, New Island, Norfolk area, and listen to WDIS radio, and I will be on from 4 to 5 p.m., and you'll hear me on Sunday, this Sunday, and I'll be talking, of course. And if you can't be in that area physically, you can listen on WDISAM.com, internet radio, and listen in, and you can call in, too. Either case, you can call in and give me some of your opinions, etc. And that's a live show now. I'm doing that show live, so I hope that you have a chance to listen in. That's this Sunday. Okay, and for those of you Pacific time, it's 1 to 2 p.m., etc., so you guys can figure it out. And again, it's why life is. It's just on another day that you can listen in and kind of get a feel for what it's all about. Okay, so for tonight, hopefully, this will have been a kind of lesson, we'll say, but also some ideas on issues of marriage. I hope it has not made too much of a wave for those of you who have certain political agendas about marriage. I think the most important thing is to realize that marriage is a spiritual condition that is based upon something more than any creature other than humans have. Some animals stay together for life, but they don't have the same spiritual connection with each other that human beings do, nor do they have the complicated nature that human beings have to endure. So I want you to consider that and think about it. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.